Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Joining me today, Dan Reese. Dan, great to have you on again, even though the circumstances are not great for the first By the Numbers episode of the year.
Yeah, it's great to be back with you, Ken. Wish it was under better circumstances, but at least the season started and pretty stoked about that. So,
all right. Been really cool to see a lot of your conversation on Twitter and all the things you've been doing with stats and data analysis over the off season. Anything you want to talk about in particular or plug?
Yeah, nothing really right now big going on. Just you can always follow me on Twitter at DPReese8. Just try to throw out stats from every once in a while and highlight any other analytics going on. So,
all right. Very cool. Why don't you start us off today with the first number?
Sure. Sounds good. 99. This is the first game in the last 99 times that the Ravens have lost after leading by 14 plus points during the game. So that's pretty remarkable. We aren't used to situations like this where they were up big and then managed to blow the lead. Their 98 wins straight before this was the second longest streak since 1930. In the second quarter, when they were up 14-0, they had a win probability based on NFL Faster of 85%. So they were sitting good and just managed, things kind of fell apart.
So. Okay. So that would have said that by the Ravens' own record, they had a close to 100% chance to win that game, but 85% by Faster probably uses league data, I'm guessing.
Yeah, just historical data based off across the league, just neutral. That's just neutral win percentage, not taking in any lines or anything like that.
So. I wouldn't look at the Ravens as being a good team in that. Anyway,
right.
Just a complete bummer. And I thought the same thing. And we were at the game, I think at 14-0, they got it won. They're not going to blow a 14-0 lead to the Raiders. And sure enough,
yep.
Unbelievable. All right. 30 of 33. And that's the number of four-man rushes that the Raiders brought out of 33 total. This is one of the really frustrating things. They had 29 of those 30 four-man rushes were 4-0 vanilla rushes with only one other play that was a simulated pressure where they dropped two from the line of scrimmage. 4-0 to me is a shorthand that I use. It says they rushed four and they dropped no more than one from the line of scrimmage. There were some 4-1s and some 4-0s, so I'm grouping them together there. It does not bode well for the Ravens that they couldn't hold up a tackle in a game where they face such a vanilla rush, because the IOL in a lot of ways has not been tested by this first week with a lot of very easy looks in terms of pass rushes.
Yeah, and then, they do have good edge rushers, Crosby and Yannick. Yep. So they were a pretty dangerous duo. And then, more bad news about offensive tackles coming out today. So, with Stanley looking to maybe miss some time. So, it doesn't bode well. They're definitely going to have to figure out some way to get some protection, when they face some more challenging rushes coming up. So, all right, my next number is 0.2%. That was the touchdown probability based on ESPN's expected rush yards model on Tyson Williams' 35-yard touchdown run. So, that's one in every 500 times someone in that position based off of the yardage and alignment of the defense and offensive linemen at the handoff would be expected to score a touchdown. The expected rush yards on that play were only at 4 yards. And so he had 31 yards over expected, which is pretty amazing. Great cutback, great speed to burst out. He was traveling at 12.23 miles an hour when he crossed the line of scrimmage, which is compared to the average running back speed of 8.8 miles per hour on inside runs. So he was hauling. And then he got even faster, top speed of 18.9 miles per hour at the 10-yard line to beat out, I think it was a cornerback or safety there. So he gunned it. It was a great run.
It was a great run. And you know, the missed tackles in level two, he really slipped all the contact that was on that run, which was very impressive. And obviously that's how you pile up a big RYOE number on a single run. It is not an inspectable number. It's one of those numbers where it's too complex to actually inspect what's behind it, but it's not unreasonable for people to think that it might have been 4 yards that you'd expect at the handoff, I think, and that he had a big run there. But a great fourth and one run, great result. You know, there was a lot of talk on the later fourth and one that the Ravens should have just kicked a field goal. And I go, wait a minute, what about the first fourth and one where they got a 35-yard touchdown on it? You know, you gotta kind of think it both ways. All right, I'll move on. 19.0. That is Lamar Jackson's yards per play with ample time and space in this game. So he only had ample time and space on 7 of 33 plays that resulted in a pass or sack. So that's not dropbacks. So if he scrambled, that's taken out of the denominator there. But all 7 of those passes he completed, it included 3 of his longest 4 passes of the day. In fact, the pass yardage on those plays were 49, 29, 21, 13, 9, 6, and 6. So he was remarkable when he had a little bit of time to throw. And as the game wore on, they did some things that were a little bit optimistic, you know, might bode optimistically for how they'll handle not having any offensive tackles at this point by doing some chip blocking, including some that was self-directed by Lamar. Don't know if you saw him ask Latavius Murray, go up the line of scrimmage and block Nassib on one play.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see that. That's great to hear. I'd love seeing they lined up Ricard some more, kind of in a tight end type position to get help with the blocking. I saw that. Motioned him through a bunch too. So, you know, I think that sort of thing is going to be key. But that's awesome to see that when he had time, those wide receivers were, you know, paying off and were able to make it work. So that's promising, at least. All right. My next one is set of two numbers, -0.32 and -0.83. The -0.32 is the EPA, which is the expected points added on rushes on early downs. So first and second down. That compares to a -0.116 league average. So well below the league average on early down rushes. And then -0.83 expected points added on passes on late downs, which is third and fourth down, compared to a +0.0243 for the league wide average. So much worse on late passes. So early rushes and late passes, much worse than the league average. Two areas that the team really needs to focus on and improve going forward.
Okay, you mentioned here, this last note I see, they were well above the league average when they passed on early downs or rushed on later downs, which would have included, say, that fourth and one or maybe some third and one, third down scrambles by Jackson.
Yep, right, exactly. Yeah, they were good, kind of early passes and late rushes. It's just the other two combinations that they need to improve on, for sure.
It'll be challenging for them to pass early as often as this season goes on, but it'll be even more challenging for them to pass on third and long when the opponent knows it's coming.
Right.
All right, let's move on. 21. That is the number of non-penalty and non-spike snaps for the dime defense. It's 27% of all defensive snaps. Here's what I like about that number. The Ravens established themselves as the dime being their primary package in 2019 with 42.2%. You can get there a couple different ways, but the first part you do is you're committed to the dime when it's an obvious passing down. The second is you get to play a ton of dime when you're leading games by a lot, and you get to finish them effectively in dime, sometimes for a quarter, sometimes even for a half. That's another way to pile up dime snaps as well. Both of them are good things, in my opinion, because you get your inside linebackers off the field who are the coverage weakness. So they made really good use of cornerback and safety depth in that first game. We saw a lot of Stevens. We did not yet see Geno Stone. We did not yet see our Darius Washington, but they made good use of their depth. They did happen to allow 8.0 yards per play on those plays, but I really believe that the portent for that factor is for the amount of dime they're playing is very good for the rest of the season. So I hope they're able to continue to play a fair percentage of it.
Yeah, I think, a couple more injuries. We'll see how that shakes up with the dime. But yeah, I'd definitely like to see the dime out in coverage. They just shut down Las Vegas's run game. So, you know, Las Vegas really had to lean on the passing, and that's, I think, where some of the dime comes in. So, all right, my next numbers are looking forward to the Kansas City game. It's a set of four numbers, so bear with me. 22%, 22%, 40%, 69%. These are just based off of 1 week, so don't get too excited. But Kansas City had a 22% pass rush win rate, which was the worst in the NFL through week one. They had a 22% run stop win rate, which is, again, the worst. So both of those are when Kansas City is on defense, the pass rush win rate and the run stop win rate. So those are, they were the worst in both of those. 40% is the pass block win rate, which is 26th. And 69% was the run block win rate, which is 18th. So they were the worst in both of the defensive sides, and 26th and 18th on the offensive side. So I know they went against a great Cleveland offensive line, but, you know, we're, our line is no Cleveland, but still that bodes well that maybe they aren't as daunting of a matchup as, you know, as they may have seemed. So,
yeah, it was that context is important there, because I think Cleveland also, in terms of their pass rushers, certainly gave them a lot of trouble, Orlando Brown in particular. So, yeah, it's a good stat, and we hope we can draw something on that in the future. Yep. I'll go to my next. It's 13. That's the number of non-penalty, non-smike snaps of race car that the Ravens played. Four outside linebackers, zero inside linebackers. So I kind of got at this in the dime a little bit, but the dime, you can put six defensive backs on the field and still have a linebacker, usually one, and then four down linemen. Wink is boldly going further than that. He's saying we're not going to have any inside linebackers. They're a coverage liability in a lot of cases, and the players they have on this team, I think that's honestly true. And so on a fair percentage of the dime snaps, he took out both inside linebackers. With Clark playing with the green dot, of course, he can do that. Has the flexibility to get whoever he wants on the field. And I think this will be very effective against other QBs who either don't get rid of the ball quickly or they're pocket passers who don't like to be moved off the spot. Baker Mayfield falls into that category, and you know it should at least be a good matchup there. Ben Roethlisberger less so, but Joe Burrow, another one who probably is going to be bothered by pressure this year. So hopefully this will be effective in more games as we go forward.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is one of those. So yes. I don't think it'll help too much this week. But yeah, I love seeing the race car package. Love seeing all those guys out there mixing up where they're coming from, different moves out there with all those outside linebackers just getting after the QB. So that's always fun to watch. My last number is 65% and 73.5%. Again, looking forward to Kansas City matchup. 65% of the targets for Kansas City in week one went to either Tyreek Hill or Kelce. That's 15 and 7, respectively, out of the 34. Tyreek Hill had 73.5% share of the team's air yards, which is just a ridiculous amount. Nearly three quarters of the team's air yards were to Tyreek Hill. The next highest last week was 62%, and even that was ridiculously high. So
who was that?
It was Devontae Smith, the new kid. Okay. But that's just amazing. But, you know, it was a really interesting defense that Cleveland used, kind of giving them mostly underneath things. And then they just took shots every once in a while to Tyreek when the defense changed it up. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what approach we use to try and shut those two down.
So. Yeah, it's certainly largely about that. It's not all the weapons they had, but they didn't run the ball effectively. So, you know, hopefully this is still a game where the Ravens can play tough. I mean, that may be what we have to hope for this year. The big number and the one nobody really wants to hear right now, $27.5 million and $1.2 million. The Ravens currently have 14 players on IR representing $27.5 million of current cap. And that I'm not even sure that really reflects how serious the team's injuries are in terms of a percentage of the total. But the Chiefs only have one player on IR with a total current cap of $1.2 million. So obviously, this is really the story of the Ravens. And coming in this Thursday, now we're recording this, and the Ravens have 9 players on the injury report, and the Chiefs have none. So obviously, this is the story of this week for the Ravens, and unfortunately, it might be the story for this season.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, those are the players on IR plus the 9 and 0 on the injury report. So that doesn't even account for those. Man, it is a rough spot we're in. So it's really, and no more cap to try and pull in more players. So we're kind of stuck with the roster we got, more or less. So it's going to be a tough year.
It's a great point though. Now, if you're in the Ravens front office right now, do you punt at this point on the season in terms of trying to acquire talent? Because one thing, you can go out and you can spend a couple of million more on cap and probably get 2 left tackles at the replacement level kind of thing. It would be additional. Michael Schofield is still out there. You know, they may have another tackle in mind that would be bad, but, you know, still another body that they could bring back. Do you go out and spend even $2 to $4 million trying to do this? Or do you go out and spend any more draft capital to try and acquire someone?
I don't honestly think they have enough room to even sign someone for $2 million or anything like that. Maybe a couple more veteran players, veteran minimum players, but they really have like no room and no more switches that they can flip to get more. They are stretched entirely thin at this point, and I wouldn't go any further. You know, this, you know, maybe someone to just at least field a team if you have to in that point. But yeah, I wouldn't, maybe later in the year if you end up in a good spot. But right now, nope. I would ride with what you got.
All right. Well, I think the Ravens have decided that too. By the way, Dan has some outstanding cap understanding pieces that was done, visual cap understanding piece that was done this offseason, where you can really see what component of the cap is still available to be restructured. That's extremely useful way to look at it. Breaks each player's cap into 4 separate components. Worth going out there. Take a look on the video section of filmstudybaltimore.com and you'll find it. That was outstanding stuff, Dan. I hope we can do that every year, because that is just one of the really top pieces to understanding cap that's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's always a fun time to start thinking about all the cap and how it all breaks down. So,
all right, my friend, great to have you back on the show and, you know, as a co-host and doing what you do every week. And we'll talk to you next week on Film Study.